How is Japan's economy dealing with its natural disaster?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The death toll in Japan's earthquake and tsunami is likely to go past 10,000. Cleanup and recovery will cost tens of billions of dollars. And the hefty price tag means the country will need to maintain a good credit rating, allowing Japan to borrow money at affordable rates. Tom Byrne is a senior vice president for Moody's in Singapore, and he's with us now. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Just tell us, is Japan's credit rating in danger?
Probably not because of this disaster, but we do have a negative outlook because we're concerned about the government's ability to fashion an effective fiscal and economic reform response to the debt problems that the government faces.
Yeah, there's a lot of debt in Japan, but then we have this calamitous event that's not man-made. Do you take things like that into consideration?
We're trying to put our arms around this to see what the economic consequences are first and then what the fiscal consequences would be. Our benchmark is the 1995 Kobe earthquake, where the economic damages were about 2 to 2.5% of GDP. The fiscal costs were a little more than 1% of GDP. If it's of that order of magnitude, most likely we're not going to see any severe stress in the government bond market here.
I would imagine there's some PR in this as well. You guys don't want to look like you're just piling on. Do you take that into consideration as well?
It's kind of tough, but we'll be looking at the various sectors in the economy, and we're credit analysts, so we have to call it as we see it. Japan's a big economy. I mean, the output is as big as the combined economies of Germany and Italy. So in the near term, yes, there'll be, I think, severe economic consequences.
Tom Byrne, Senior Vice President for Moody's in Singapore. Tom, thank you.
Thank you very much.
The question, of course, is how would the U.S. fare if a magnitude 8.9 earthquake were to happen here? There's, of course, the economic cost, and then there's the nuclear power question. We've seen explosions at a plant in northern Japan with the possibility of a meltdown, and there are calls from some in Congress asking for a moratorium on nuclear energy development. Similar moratoriums are being discussed in Germany and Switzerland today. Barry Scanlon is a former FEMA official. He's now president of the emergency preparedness firm Witt Associates. Good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Does the U.S. have the economic wherewithal to really deal with something like that?
Well, I think so. Of course, it matters where it happens and how it happens. As we saw with the Northridge earthquake, when you lose the freeways and you have red-tagged hospitals and so forth, that can greatly affect the economy. Studies have shown over time that there's actually a big influx of capital and investment after an event. So there's a large amount of reconstruction dollars that go into an area. But there's certainly a short-term hit, and it affects a lot of the different economic systems that an area has.
What about the infrastructure? We're seeing these problems in Japan at the nuclear power plants there. Is our situation, our nuclear situation, similar? Would those plants sustain an 8.9 or a 9.0 quake?
They have a lot of systems in place, and they're built to withstand them. But, of course, the big issue for nuclear plants is whether or not they have backup power to be able to keep things cool and keep things operating. Some of these were built 30 or 40 years ago. The secondary issue of it is there's a lot of places where the areas have been built up around the plants much bigger than they thought, the density of population. So all of the evacuation plans are something that really should be looked at because the area has changed over the several decades for many of these plants.
Barry Scanlon, president of Witt Associates in Washington. Barry, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Let's do the numbers. Markets are lower right now. The Dow off about a third of a percent, 43 points, 12,000 even. Tokyo's Nikkei plummeted 6% today, the biggest drop since the financial crisis. Investment group Berkshire Hathaway is buying chemical company Lubrizol for $9 billion.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constellation Energy, committed to customer choice and powering America's clean energy future through investments in natural gas, nuclear, wind, solar, and efficiency technologies. By Allianz, managing over $1.7 trillion in assets, providing investment solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. And by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com.
Just about everywhere you look on television, someone's talking about Charlie Sheen. CBS is expected to lose millions of dollars in ad revenue without its primetime hit show, Two and a Half Men. but the ad revenue loss may only be temporary, as Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
This is how CBS CEO Leslie Moonves put it recently.
Advertising is back. My sales guys call once a week. They can't sell our shows fast enough.
Moonves says some spots are selling for 40% more than they were a year ago. That bodes well for the networks as they approach what's known as the upfront market this spring, when media buyers make their big ad purchases for the next season. Brand strategist Adam Hanft says ad rates on the whole could be up as much as 10% over last year.
Marketers were holding on to a lot of dollars because they were concerned that we might have a double dip. And as they feel more confident, some of those budgets that were in a lockbox, if you will, for a while, have now been opened up.
Particularly auto companies. Some nearly disappeared during the recession, but they were back at the Super Bowl in a big way, with spots like Volkswagen's Little Darth Vader. Brad Adgate of Horizon Media says TV is still the best way to reach a large audience.
TV viewing is still very strong, and clearly there is a long love affair that marketers have with television.
And where might that love affair go next spring? Here's Adam Hanft.
People are hungry for escapism, so I do think that it'll be a lot of frothy, kind of high entertainment value, no intellectual stress programming.
Like,
men.
Oh, right, not that one. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally, New York City's Transportation Commissioner has approved a dozen restaurant requests for long, narrow seating areas that'll replace parallel parking spots on the street. These curbside cafes would be separated from moving traffic by a thin row of planters housing flowers and greenery. With the dining experience, you get to sit ringside on some pretty bustling streets. Never mind, though, you had to park in New Jersey because all the spots nearby were taken up by tables and chairs. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Online at marketplace.org, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
48 million Americans enjoy bird watching. The Audubon Society is happy about that. Be even happier, though, if they had a little something else.
A younger, more diverse audience to help us create the Audubon of the future.
I'm Kai Rizdal, attracting young birders to the wildlife scene. That's next time on Marketplace. We'll have the day's business news as well. It's all from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.